This week's icon of Irish science is George Boole. He's been variously described as the founder of pure mathematics, the father of computer science, and the discoverer of symbolic logic. George Boole was also the first professor of mathematics at University College Cork, and so we're here in Cork to find out about this self-taught son of a shoemaker. Our guides to Boole will be mathematician Professor Des McHale, author of George Boole, His Life and Work, and engineer Professor Peter Kennedy, Vice President of Research at University College Cork. So first, let's go over to the maths building at UCC. Professor Des McHale, author of George Boole, His Life and Work, you've described Boole as a mystic genius whose ideas have utterly transformed the world in which we live in. Tell us why he deserves such an accolade.
Until Boole's time, at about 1805, 1815, mathematics consisted basically of what we all did in school: arithmetic, algebra, geometry, maybe a little bit of calculus. And it looked as if mathematics would just develop along those lines, developing and finding out more about those particular areas. However, Boole's first main contribution to mathematics was he invented a new kind of mathematics. He extended the boundaries of mathematics by making mathematics out of things that people did not consider mathematics before. Let me give you a simple example. Boole talked about flocks of sheep. And suppose you had a flock of sheep and you put them together with another flock of sheep. What would you get? Well, you'd just get a flock of sheep. A bigger flock of sheep, admittedly, but a flock of sheep. Now, that doesn't seem like a very promising basis for making new mathematics. But Boole said, call a flock of sheep X and call the other flock of sheep X, and putting them together is X multiplied by X. So you get X multiplied by X is equal to X, or X squared equals X. And that's the basic equation of Boolean algebra. So it doesn't look a very promising start. Now, what about numbers? Well, the only numbers that satisfy X squared equals X are 0, 0 squared, 0 by 0 equals 0, and 1, 1 multiplied by 1 equals 1. So in ordinary arithmetic, X squared equals X has just solutions 1 and 0. But in Boole's algebra, this new algebra of classes that he made up, everything satisfied X squared equals X. And what Boole did was to take collections of objects and find a way mathematically of putting them together and forming new type of mathematics with it. And nobody had ever done this before. And it was very daring because, you know, everybody just followed and went along with the stuff that was in the textbooks and didn't think of making new things. Now, at the same time, Hamilton was doing a similar thing with quaternions. So it was very much in the air, make up new types of mathematical symbols. And, of course, Boole did this in the context of logic. He was interested in analysing logical statements, and in particular, he was interested in analysing the way the mind works. He had no idea that this would lead to the developments in electronic engineering or computer science or cybernetics or lots of other areas. But that did happen about 150 years after Boole's death.
And what are those applications?
Well, everybody listening to this programme has operated a computer in some sense. They probably have a PC on their desks or in their home, but very certainly when they take money out of the hole in the wall of the bank, they're actually operating a computer. Almost everything we do nowadays is operated electronically, whether it's washing machines or vacuum cleaners or computers or bank transaction machines or whatever. And it did turn out that the algebra of logic that Boole developed in the 1850s was exactly the right language for the operation of modern electronic computing and other machines. All the digital technology, I think, comes from Boole. And it's interesting, Boole started off by being interested in astronomy. And he and his father built a telescope. And when he was living here in Cork, he had a telescope in his garden. And anybody who wished to come in and view the heavens in a spirit of reverence for God's creation was invited to look through this telescope. So he saw the planets and the stars, etc. When we now get messages back from the planets, from all these probes that we send up, they consist of an endless stream of elements of a Boolean algebra, ones and zeros, that the computers and the machinery then translate back into the colour pictures that we see. So it is very interesting to think that from very, very humble background socially, from a very, very humble background educationally, he was able to have those absolutely new and independent thoughts that were lying there in wait since the beginning of time for anyone to see, but it took a genius like Boole to see them. So I always believe there is great simplicity in genius, that geniuses don't look for complicated ideas. They look for new, very simple ideas and put them into practice. However, sometimes they have no idea what they're actually going to lead to, and I don't think Boole had any idea of what his developments would lead to.
You mentioned his father earlier. He had a profound impact on Boole.
Well, Boole's father was a shoemaker, lived in Lincoln in the east of England, and he wasn't too interested in making shoes. He was much more interested in building scientific apparatus and giving scientific lectures. But of course, you can't make a living out of that if you're uneducated and you don't belong to university. So Boole's business failed. And although he was a very good father to his son and to the other members of the family, he wasn't able to support them. And this is the reason why Boole had to leave school at the age of 14 and get a job as an assistant teacher and never attended school after the age of 14. Now, this was a tragedy in one sense, because if he had developed in the normal sense, got a secondary education, if he had gone on to the University of Cambridge, he would have become one of the great scientists of the day. On the other hand, he would have been a conventional scientist. He'd have just learned all of the things that the university had to offer. He'd have deepened his knowledge. He wouldn't have done anything new. The very fact that Boole was deprived educationally and had to teach himself pretty well all he knew, or the little bits he learned from his father, meant that he was an independent thinker. He was very self-reliant. Now, here was a boy who learned classical Latin, classical Greek, German, French, Italian, Spanish, and could speak them fluently by the age of 14. Now, how many people could do that nowadays? You know, even with the help of schools and grinds and everything else, kids don't seem to be able to manage things like that.
So like his contemporary Hamilton, he was a child prodigy.
He was definitely a child prodigy. And one story is at the age of 1.5, now I'm talking about 1.5, he actually ran away from his house or his mother and father and went downtown and was sitting in the marketplace, almost like the child Jesus, spelling hard words for coins. You give me tuppence, you give me threepence, I'll spell a hard word for you, at the age of 1.5. At the age of 12, he was translating classical poetry into Latin and Greek and publishing it in local newspapers. At the age of 18, he was publishing original mathematical research. And all of this from a self-educated, self-taught person. That is quite astonishing.
In 1840, when aged only 25, he published his first original mathematical research. What was its impact?
Well, I think, first of all, it was difficult for someone like him to get something published. He did happen to know the editors of the Cambridge Journal in which it was actually published. But first of all, it must have had a tremendous impact on himself. The thought that he was able to do this independently and join the great names like Gauss and Lagrange and Hamilton and Gregory and all those other people. Secondly, I think it made people realise that they had a very bright person living among them. But also, I think it gave him the spur to do other things, because you say to yourself, if I can do new things, remember, mathematics for a long time was just stagnant. So I think Boole got his job here in Cork on the basis of the publications he had done in the 1840s, and that was very important. It meant that he could stop being just an untrained schoolmaster and running his own school in Lincoln and now move up into the higher echelons of mathematical society. He could come to Cork, he could have a library, he could have students, he could be a working mathematician, which is very rare in those days, of course.
And invariant theory, what does that tell us?
Well, invariant theory was a new branch of mathematics that Boole invented. And I suppose anybody going to school will learn how to solve a quadratic equation. Do you remember the old formula? X equals minus b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. Hope that doesn't bring back many unhappy memories to our listeners. But you look at this thing, b squared minus 4ac. That's going to crop up always when you get quadratic equations. And Boole looked at things like that. What things always crop up and stay the same when you solve equations of a certain kind? And then he looked at more in general. Are there mathematical expressions that crop up again and again and again and never change no matter what the context is? And he called such a thing an invariant. Now, Boole did just two papers on invariant theory, founded the subject, and then more or less left it there to other people like Cayley and Hamilton and various other mathematicians around at the time, so he didn't develop it. Yet, the similar ideas there led to a lot of other things. So when Einstein came along and was talking about the theory of relativity, invariant theory became very, very important, because certain things in relativity are invariant, certain things are not. In fact, there's an astonishing coincidence here. Boole's sister came here to Cork to be a governess to the children of William Fitzgerald, who was the Protestant Bishop of Cork, and his wife had died. And she was the governess to his children, and one of those children was George Francis Fitzgerald, after whom Fitzgerald contraction was called. And again, that was another part of the theory of relativity on which Einstein based his theory. So you get these cosmic mathematical and scientific coincidences when you start looking at lives of this.
You mentioned Boole's appointment as professor of maths here at University College Cork. This is somebody who had no undergraduate education whatsoever, and he was appointed first professor of maths. Yeah. Extraordinary appointment.
Well, absolutely. Now, it was called Queen's College Cork in the day and was one of the four Irish universities in Belfast, in Galway, in Cork, and then there was a university later in Dublin. And Boole applied. Now, what chance had somebody, not just no university degree, but no secondary education, had left school at the age of 14? Well, first of all, he got recommendations from all the top mathematicians of the day. People like Kelvin, people like Cayley, People like Tyndall, who had read his papers and knew that he was a quality person. And I think it's a wonderful thing that the governors of University College, or Queen's College Cork in those days, recognised somebody of quality, because there were lots of other candidates for the job that they could have given it to. They took a risk, and the risk certainly paid off. Of course, they also had his papers. He had 20 published research papers at this stage. He had also got the first gold medal ever awarded by the Royal Society of London for his paper in 1844. So he was without formal qualifications, but his informal qualifications and his publications were really absolutely top class. And the people who recommended him, I think, were to be trusted.
Tell us about his time in Cork and his influence on University College Cork.
Well, first of all, he was the only professor in the department. In those days, there was just one professor per department. He had no secretarial help. He had no assistant lecturers. He had no lecturers of any sort. He had a good library, which is good. His salary was about £250 a year, which wasn't an awful lot in Victorian times, but that was only half his salary. The other half he had to attract from students. So every student paid a fee to their professor. And as some people say, some of us would starve nowadays if that was the situation. He was quite happy here. He got used to every aspect of life in Cork except the weather. And, of course, it was the weather that eventually killed him, because he, at the age of 49, he walked from his house in Ballintemple into the university in a rainstorm in December, got pneumonia and died quite prematurely. Now, what he would have achieved if he had lived much longer is absolutely amazing, because he'd been in touch at the stage at Babbage, who had built the difference engine and the analytical engine. And if those two people had got together in the mid-19th century, Babbage with the hardware and Boole with the software, we could have had computer science 150 years earlier. And you can imagine how different the world would have been. World War I, for example, would have been fought in a totally different way. So would World War II. And that's one of the big ifs of history. If Boole had lived, if he'd seen the potential of his mathematics to develop computer science and electronics, we could have had a completely different world.
It's extraordinary that there was very little contact between Boole and Hamilton. Here are these two great mathematician titans, I suppose, living, you know, a little over 200 miles apart, but they had no contact or very little contact between each other.
Well, that's one of the great mysteries of the history of Irish science. I'd like to think there was a social gap between the two people. Hamilton was of the upper classes. He'd been knighted. He was a professor of astronomy at Trinity College. Boole was the son of a shoemaker. He had no degree. I think there was also probably the Dublin-Cork antipathy, which still exists, as you probably know. I think also Hamilton was perhaps, now this is my own theory, was slightly jealous of Boole, in that in 1848 Boole wrote a paper on quaternions showing that Hamilton had some redundancies in his quaternions that he could get away by assuming a lot less. And I can imagine Hamilton saying to himself, who is this little whippersnapper in Cork telling me about quaternions? I am the inventor and discoverer of quaternions, and surely he can't be telling me what to do about them. And perhaps it was a mistake for Boole to write that little paper. It was only a couple of pages long, but maybe he trod on Hamilton's toes a little bit. Hamilton, of course, was a difficult person, had a difficult life, had problems in his personal life, as you know, had problems with alcohol. And Boole had a very happy family life. So I think there was a social gap between the two men. There was a nationality gap as well, and Boole was born in England and Hamilton born in Ireland. Boole, for example, was never made a member of the Royal Irish Academy, which is a mystery. Now, Hamilton was chairman of the Royal Irish Academy at the time, although Boole was made a fellow of the Royal Society, which is probably slightly more prestigious. One of the other reasons why Boole and Hamilton were not closer, in my opinion, is that they both misunderstood what they were doing. Now, perhaps it's pretentious of me to say that, but we can say by hindsight. Hamilton was talking about quaternions, and he imagined that quaternions would be the solution to the problems of the physical universe. And in fact, this did happen in a certain sense. Boole was studying Boolean algebra, and he was quite convinced he was going to unlock the secrets of the human mind. So you have two people in two totally different directions. In my opinion, what Boole and Hamilton were both doing was that they were innovating in abstract algebra. Boole was bringing in a new system of abstract algebra that had never been done before, that was adding an extra equation, namely x squared equals x, to the system. Hamilton was doing abstract algebra with quaternions, and he brought in xy is not equal to yx, the first non-commutative system ever seen. If the two men had realised that they were both tremendous innovators and were really blowing wide open abstract algebra, I think they would have been very close. Hamilton thought he was a physicist, Boole thought he was a logician. They were both pure algebraists, in my opinion. So I think I'd have to tell my students, mathematicians are human beings. They may be great geniuses in their own right, but they are subject to the same petty difficulties and jealousies and social differences that the rest of us are. But that is a great mystery, and I probably won't be unravelled at this stage.
We've talked about a lot of the work that Boole did before he came to Cork. What work did he do whilst he was here in Cork?
Well, while he was here in Cork, he had written a book on logic in 1847. And this was the seminal work on logic. Unfortunately, it wasn't very widely publicised. Not very many people knew about it. So, you know, it hadn't made a great impact. He decided to rewrite it and to extend it to include the theory of probability. And Boole does not get enough credit for the theory of probability. And as you know, the theory of probability rules modern life. All insurance policies, all risk analysis, all things where there's a probability of something happening, let's say, you know, the lotto, various things like that, they depend on probability. So do life insurance. And Boole discovered that the laws which he had given for logic, the x squared equals x that I talked about earlier, actually applied in probability theory as well. And that the very same algebra that he was using to analyse logic and the mind eventually would analyse probability theory as well. If you now have an accident where one person is 70% responsible and somebody else is 30% responsible, that concept came from Boole in 1857 of fuzzy logic and fuzzy probability. So they do determine our life very much, as well as the applications to electronics and to computer science. So,
how would you rank him in the hierarchy of scientists?
Well, I'm biased because I happen to teach in the university where Boole was, and I've written a book about Boole, and you know, you get sort of fond of a person individually. But I think he's not given the credit he deserves. I think a lot of people don't regard logic as a branch of mathematics in the strict sense. But Boole, of course, did produce books on differential equations, on difference equations. And the fact that he produced difference equations means that he was very much more in tune with the 20th century and the 21st century than with the 19th century. So I would rank him very highly indeed. And somebody once asked Einstein, do you keep a notebook to write down all your great ideas in? And Einstein said, what do you mean great ideas? I've only ever had one. But if you have one idea and it's really good enough, then that's a wonderful claim to fame. Now, Boole perhaps would fall down slightly on the extent of the contributions that he made. They were quite particular in a certain area, but they were absolutely devastating. And the longer life goes on in the 20th century and the 21st century, the more important Boole's work seems to become.
But where would you put him in the hierarchy?
I would put him very high. I'd certainly put him in the top 10. But of course, the top 10 is a very, very crowded area. You've got people like Euler and Gauss and Lagrange and Laplace and, you know, some wonderful mathematicians. The people in that top 10 are just so good, it's very hard for anyone to get in. It's like somebody picking the best football team of all time. You've got a really good footballer, but, you know, would you actually put him in the top 15 of all time? But I certainly would put him in the top 10. Possibly not in the top 4 or 5. Because that's pretty well decided already. But certainly I would think in the top 10.
Now, Boole was more than a mathematician. He was the real 19th century polymath. Can you tell us more about the other aspects of his life?
Well, first of all, he was very interested in language. And of course, this was important because he discovered that in ordinary language, you know, the set of red-haired men and red-haired women is equal to the set of red-haired men and women. Things like that are in ordinary language and, you know, nobody had seen them before him. So his knowledge of languages, his knowledge of continental languages, his knowledge of the English language did help him develop his mathematics. But he was also a poet. He wrote a lot of poetry. At one stage, his wife took all the poetry and threw it into the fire and burned it, and says, a great genius like you should not be bothered writing poetry. Of course, Hamilton wrote poetry as well and was a friend of Wordsworth, and of William Wordsworth and Dorothy Wordsworth. Boole was interested in practical mathematics. He was interested in astronomy. He was also he felt that everybody should have skills like a carpenter or somebody who can work with their hands. And that's very important because that's lost to a lot of people. I mean, I'm hopeless. I can't cut a piece of wood straight. And Boole said the more you use hand-eye coordination, the better your mind is going to be. And he actually gave lessons in Cork and Lincoln to apprentices on the lathe and woodwork and metalwork and various things like that. He was also a very good family man. He was somebody who had 5 daughters, all of them geniuses in their own right. I mean, they could do a whole programme about Boole's daughters that we want to do. He was a good member of society and the community. He was very much involved in a home for fallen women, as it was called at the time. He was very much involved in special lessons for apprentices, so then their days off, they'd be able to increase their mathematical and scientific knowledge. He did statistical work during the post-famine period here in Cork. He was very much involved in the community. He was also very religious. And he had a scheme of turning the Bible and religious writings into mathematics, which is really scary to read. Can you imagine taking every sentence of the Old Testament, you know, he that eateth this shall be defiled, you know, he that is not justified by faith or whatever, to turn all those sentences into mathematical statements and come up with the definitive religious conclusions. Now, that is scary. That is really tough. Now, of course, it's leaving out things like faith and various other things like that, but it really would have solved it. He wanted to sort of reunite religious people. He dabbled in a lot of religious areas. He tried to write down. He was just interested in things like that. He wanted to be a clergyman at one stage, of course, but he disagreed with some of the 39 articles of the Church of England. He was just a person that, you know, people often ask me, who would you like to meet from history? I'd love to meet him for a couple of hours. First of all, to ask him a lot of questions. And secondly, to tell him what has been done with his work. He would have been astonished. If in the great hereafter he's looking down on us to see. Now, he's buried in Blackrock, only 100 yards away from my house, and I mean, I'm a rather eccentric person myself, so sometimes I go down to his grave and I just talk to him, and I just tell him what's happening in mathematics, and just in case he might be able to hear me, he might be able to listen to me, and I feel very satisfied in doing that, to know that the mortal remains of this man are just within a couple of inches away from me is a wonderful feeling.
And you feel that he might be the model for a character from Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes.
Now, this wasn't my theory originally. This was the theory of Dr. Bowers, who was a lecturer in mathematics at the University of Leeds. But I read in the newspaper and I said I would investigate it. And now I am quite convinced that Moriarty, the arch-villain from Sherlock Holmes, is based on the life and character of George Boole. Just to give you a little evidence for it, if you look, first of all, Moriarty was a mathematician, that figures. He also was a mathematician at a small provincial university in the British Isles that would certainly fit in with Queen's College Cork. The papers he wrote on astronomy and binary stars, very much the same as early papers in astronomy Boole wrote, and Moriarty's treatise on the binomial theorem is very close to Boole's paper on a general method of analysis, which won the gold medal from the Royal Society. Now, these might be just coincidence, but you start to look more closely at what's going on. And my theory is that Conan Doyle went to a soiree in London given by Boole's wife. And remember, Boole's wife outlived him by 60 years. And lots of people called around to these parties that she used to give. And he probably heard just what a wonderful man Boole was and how saintly he was and how clever he was, etc. And I think he said to himself, look, let's turn Boole into a perverted arch-villain. Somebody who's a very clever mathematician but has taken a wrong turn somewhere. Or maybe the wiring in the brain went wrong at some stage. And Moriarty, of course, became the infamous character in Sherlock Holmes, who was killed at one stage but was so popular that he had to be resurrected. Now, I put this theory forward and a lot of people didn't believe. They said, oh, it's coincidence, you're reading too much into it. And the clincher for me was the only known photograph of George Boole. I have a copy of that. It's in my book. And the only known illustration of Moriarty by Sidney Paget, which is in the collected Sherlock Holmes. And I was able to superimpose on the sheet itself in one on top of the other. And the match drew gasps from the audience. The same shape coat, the same shape face, the same shape shoulders. I mean, they were a perfect fit. And I mean, to me, here was a bit of visual evidence that certainly clinched as far as I was concerned for the audience as well. But if this is true, then Boole will become much more famous for being the model for Moriarty than he ever was for his mathematics or for his logic or his contribution to computer science. Because I think everybody in the world has heard of Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty, and it's a very, very famous thing.
Professor Des McHale, thank you. We've moved from the Maths Building to the Office of the Vice President for Research, and I'm joined by Professor Peter Kennedy. Peter, how do UCC remember Boole today?
Boole has probably been one of the most significant figures in the history of UCC. We remember him with our library, named for him, the Boole Library. We also have a major research centre in the area of informatics called the Boole Centre for Research in Informatics.
And is there research going on in UCC today that use Boolean algebra or the invariant theory for which Boole is known?
Well, Boolean algebra is the fundamental structure that's used in all digital electronics today. So if you look at computer science or a lot of what we're doing in the microelectronics, it couldn't be happening without what Boole did. So his contribution has been fundamental, and throughout the world people are still continuing to work on his field.
Can you tell us about some of the cutting-edge research that is taking place at UCC?
Specifically in the Boole Center for Informatics, we would have large-scale grid computing, for example. We have novel languages being developed in the microelectronics area. We have work on information theory and coding theory, cryptography, all of which is using the Boolean algebra for which he's known.
Is Boole the most illustrious scientist associated with UCC?
Probably. His name is known throughout the world. And maybe not everybody knows he was in UCC, but certainly they'll recognize his name. In the fields of computer science, mathematics, or electronic engineering, he is known.
You're an engineer. When did you first become aware of Boole?
Oh, probably in my second year of electronic engineering, where we learn the basics of Boolean algebra. But now that I think about it, we learned about it in secondary school, way back in secondary school when we were doing base 2 arithmetic with ones and zeros. That's what Boole was concerned about. So it goes back to Leaving Cert mathematics. I mean, he was the forefather. He brought together the elements that made the Boolean algebra possible and everything we do in computers. He made it possible. I'm just reading something here that 70 years, his work on logic and the connection with mathematics was restricted to the philosophy community because he was thinking of it in terms of giving a formal basis to logic. And it wasn't until Claude Shannon, 70 years later, looked at this. He had taken an undergraduate class in philosophy and was then studying electrical engineering and mathematics and brought Boole's ideas from philosophy into electrical engineering and realized that you could do electrical engineering in a digital way rather than an analog way. And that's what really brought it to the forefront. So it was hidden for a long time in the philosophical literature. And maybe that's why he wasn't known for so long.
Peter, what are the applications today of Boole's work?
I suppose the big change we're seeing today is the world is going from an analog world to a digital world. Now, that means we get better quality recording with CDs instead of records, and we have personal communications devices, cellular phones, mobile phones, digital television. So the quality of everything we deal with is much higher because we've moved to a digital world. And the beauty of the digital world is something is one or zero. It's very clear to distinguish between them, and therefore the possibility of errors, the possibility of noise is removed. So you don't have scratchy sounds on your CD because everything is one or zero. And Boole gave us this, and so Boole has transformed the world for us.
A scientist of the 21st century.
Absolutely.
Professor Peter Kennedy, thank you.